This is Jim Engster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. We are live and in studio on the day after Thanksgiving. So if you'd like to join the conversation, lines are open, 877-217-5757. And you can always send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Signature support for our program comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Vantage Health Plan. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we start today with two gentlemen who are involved in a project collectively. One's a writer, one's an actor. The actor is Lewis Hertham, who's done Baton Rouge very well over the course of a career that now spans about 40 years. And we've had him on many times talking about his wildly successful career. Most recently, he's gotten all kinds of plaudits for the HBO series Westworld. But he is involved with Matthew Randazzo IV in something called Mr. New Orleans. Matthew wrote the book. Lewis has done the audio book. And since we're familiar with Mr. Hertham, let's go to him. And he is joining us from Los Angeles today. And Lewis Hertham, tell us how you got immersed in this project.
Well, first of all, good morning, Jim. Good morning, you fine people of Louisiana. Hello?
Yes, you were on the air, my friend.
Oh, there you go. Hey, buddy. Well, I was actually in Louisiana, and God, Matthew's going to have to help me remember the exact date. I think it was 2009, and I got a call from, I think it was Clifton Lee, who was a friend of Matthew's, and asked me if I'd ever read the book, because he knew I was in Louisiana, and Matthew was doing a signing one of the local bookstores. My geography is bad, I can't remember which
that's
one.
All right.
He'll have to. Anyway, so I walked in there. I wanted to read the book. I'd heard about it, and I walked in there, and as I approached the table where he was, he looked up at me and said, "Hi, Lewis," and that kind of blew my mind. So that started a wonderful friendship, and then Matthew got in touch with me, and you know, there were a lot of people interested in Matthew's book to create a TV series or a film or something, and so I kind of tried to help him as much as I could, you know, as far as just giving advice about that. And then one day he calls me and asks me to read his book on tape, and I'd never done that. It was a little daunting for many reasons. You know, especially I knew what this was like. Matthew's a very prolific author, but this was his baby. And I knew, yeah, I mean, it's an incredible book. It's one of these kind of books you just simply cannot put down and you will laugh out loud reading. And so I didn't want to screw it up, but he convinced me that I was a guy for the job. So that's how it happened.
All right. Well, Matthew is with us as well. And Mr. New Orleans is a rollicking, hilarious memoir of Frenchy Brouillette, the first gangster to break the code of secrecy of the New Orleans mob. And how did you come about this story? You've done many stories regarding New Orleans and some about the mafia. But, Matthew, how did you get into this?
Well, first off, good morning, Jim. Thank you so much for having us on the line. And thank you, Lewis, for that wonderful introduction. So I have a somewhat interesting family history. I'm Matthew Randazzo V, and the first Matthew in Louisiana was actually a early Louisiana Sicilian mob leader who was gunned down in Donaldsonville, Louisiana, 1916. And his son was very tied up with Huey Long and Carlos Marcello for decades after that. So I come from a family where having that preposterous Roman numeral behind my name, I always had an interest in Louisiana history and Louisiana underworld history. And in the process of a number of years, I got to know a lot of folks, either through my family or from my research. And I was only 21 when my family lost everything in Hurricane Katrina down in New Orleans. And I had come back to town after a few weeks, found my home destroyed, our home looted. And I had this overwhelming sense that I never had before that I had to write about New Orleans, that I had felt the city that I grew up in and that I was so obsessed with the history of had, may not have been dead, but it had been transformed into something else. And so in the process, I went and got in touch with a lot of the sources I know who knew a lot about New Orleans, had been there for a long time, and Frenchy was one of them. and Frenchie had run away from Marksville, Louisiana as a 17-year-old on the back of a stolen Harley Davidson. And basically since 1953, for half century after that, was one of the most notorious, infamous, but, beloved in his own weird way, gangsters who worked on the vice rackets in New Orleans. And after about an hour of talking with him, I realized that I hadn't discovered a source for my book. I had figured out who the voice of the book was, because he was such a funny and charismatic and unique character that almost like a Cajun Forrest Gump had been so many different places that you wouldn't expect, that he would be the ideal tour guide for my kind of tour of the Louisiana underworld of the 20th century.
Well, how did he get the moniker Mr. New Orleans?
That's kind of a funny story. So he was a protege remotely. He idolized Jack LaLanne, the great fitness guru in the 1940s and 50s, growing up in Marksville. And so he was one of the very early bodybuilders in Louisiana. And to the extent that when he was a kid and he was growing up in Marksville, his mom would actually buy him imported bodybuilding magazines from France that the local grocer had to order, and they'd give it to her in a brown paper bag as if it was lewd material, and they would look at her kind of sideways. So when he first came to New Orleans, the mob recruited him as a babyface boxer because he was really good looking and he was very muscled, and so they had him enter the Mr. New Orleans bodybuilding contest. The irony was he actually lost the contest, but he got so used to everyone calling him Mr. New Orleans after that because they assumed he won, that it ended up sticking and became a nickname for 50-plus years.
Well, New Orleans and the mob it's no big surprise that there was mafia activity in New Orleans, and Carlos Marcello is, of course, a guy who was considered to be one of the most powerful mob leaders in the United States, if not the world. Did Brouillette and Marcello cross paths?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to be very clear, most folks don't really realize that the American Mafia was born in New Orleans. That is where it originated. New Orleans was one of the main entry points for the Sicilians, Western Sicilians, into New Orleans, I mean, into the United States. So yeah, no, Frenchie was actually a close associate of Carlos Marcello. Carlos was the one who actually put him in business. Frenchie didn't come to New Orleans to become a criminal. He was working in the French Quarter, doing work like as a bartender and things like that, when Carlos had taken such an affection for him over the years as just a kind of a local character, that Carlos put him in business when he needed someone to help him with the vice rackets. And they were close friends for many, many decades. There are FBI surveillance documents of them being together throughout the 60s. He was definitely someone who was closely associated with Carlos, which is somewhat interesting because Carlos was a very secretive guy, and he somehow found an affection and trust in this kind of happy-go-lucky Cajun from Marksville who didn't fit any of the expectations of what a New Orleans mafioso would look like.
Bill Grimley writes, it's interesting when someone's biography book cover is a mugshot. But did Mr. New Orleans ever kill anybody?
No, that's a very good question, because Frenchie was a beloved character. When someone says that, they look at me like I'm glorifying someone who was very violent. Frenchie was maybe the most notoriously nonviolent gangster in the history of New Orleans. He actually became a gangster because he couldn't win fixed boxing matches when the mob tried to promote him as a boxer. He was very much a lover, not a fighter. So, no, Frenchie would always say that he sold people a good time they desperately wanted. And it was not the sort of thing that he ever had to market. He operated in basically folks that were coming out to party and whatever that might entail, to party in the French Quarter in New Orleans. His reputation was much more of a soft touch who would give. I mean, for example, I have a number of girls who worked with him who would contact me and say that he paid for their dental plans, for their retirements, bought them houses. He was not a violent character in the least, and that's actually one of the main storylines of Mr. New Orleans, is how do you survive in the New Orleans underworld, which is notoriously violent, just based on your wits, charisma, and good looks. And for 50-plus years, Frenchie managed to do that, and it's a pretty entertaining story how he pulled it off.
Well, this is Matthew Randazzo V. Obviously, there were some predecessors of the same name. You were born in 1984, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, for the year of the World's Fair in New Orleans, the ill-fated World's Fair. You're 36. Are you still living in New Orleans?
No, I am currently living in Olympia, Washington. I have a senior government jobs with Indian tribes in the Pacific Northwest now.
Well, both you and Lewis went west, as Horace Greeley said, go west, young man. And Lewis, you said this is your first audio book, and this is not an easy endeavor even for an established actor. I'm sure this took some time.
Oh, it did. I can't remember how many days we have. 8 days, I believe, long days. You know, it's very much unlike anything I've ever done as a performer, actor, anything. So it was not easy. I hear that music.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to take a short break, and we'll return for a few more minutes with Matthew Randazzo V and Lewis Hertham, the accomplished actor from this town, Baton Rouge, his town, and they're talking about Mr. New Orleans, and we're back after this 90-second pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on the day after Thanksgiving, and we are in studio live, and if you'd like to call, 877-217-5757. Lewis Hertham, the veteran actor from Baton Rouge, is with us, and he's also with Matthew Randazzo V. His book is Mr. New Orleans, about the wildlife of Frenchy Brouillette, a first gangster to break the code of secrecy of the New Orleans Mafia. It's his book, Mr. New Orleans. Lewis did the audio book. And Phil in Jefferson Terrace, please be brief. Phil, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen, and good morning, Lewis. And congratulations to you, sir. What a credit you are. To our state and to our profession, congratulations. And Phil and Beth say happy turkey, and Beth, hope you're doing
well. What's your question, Phil?
What's going to go forward now with the pandemic? I know you're a member of SAG.
So. All right. What about how's the pandemic affecting people in your line of work? And Lewis, by the way, is probably not going to come home this holiday because of the pandemic, but how's it affecting Hollywood?
Well, I'm working on a show right now called All Rise, a CBS show. And let me just say that we don't have enough time to talk about the differences. It is night and day, the difference. I don't even see the crew. We get marched into the set. There are as many as 27 cameras set up. Some of them are very small digital cameras. You basically do it like a play. You run the whole scene, your coverage, your medium shots, your masters, everything's done at the same time.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Lewis and with Matthew. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Did the late Joseph Maselli, the inspirational leader of the Italian-American community in New Orleans, did he have any connections with Carlos?
All right, Matthew, what about Joseph Maselli? Was he a catalyst for Carlos Marcello?
I'm in one of those situations where I have to remember what I publicly reported versus what I privately know. My book does not discuss him. So I will say this, that anyone who grew up, who was an Italian American in New Orleans or the greater New Orleans area, most certainly usually knew Carlos. He was a man about town, but I have nothing publicly to say about any sort of private associations.
Well, Vincent Bruno has been on this show many times. He became a Politico and, of course, was head of the police union in New Orleans, and his uncle was Carlos Marcello, and he says that a lot of what was written and reported about Carlos Marcello was wildly exaggerated, and then there are others who say he was much more violent and sinister than the story we know. What's the real story, Matthew?
That's a great question, and I've talked to members of the Marcello family as well as, you know, Mr. New Orleans is Frenchy Brouillette's story, but I interviewed hundreds of people for everyone from gangsters to governors. And what I can tell you is what I hear about Carlos is really they're two separate Carloses. When he was a young man, I think everyone who I've ever spoken to about Carlos in the 20s, 30s, and 40s was a very, very dangerous, violent guy.
Frank in Denham Springs. Frank, you're on with Matthew and with Lewis. Hi, Frank. Good morning to you. Frank in Denham Springs, I think we lost Frank. Could you expand on that about Carlos Marcello, Matthew, being in the 40s a violent guy? When we talk about violence, are we talking about actually doing people in?
Yeah, no, he's certainly suspected by the FBI. He was never convicted of murder, but he was certainly suspected in the disappearances or deaths of a number of folks. As he got older, however, Most people who knew him well will suggest he had a religious reawakening in the 60s and 70s. He actually was a very devout Christian, and he was the person that largely chose to stop making new members of New Orleans mob to wind it down. That's one of the reasons why New Orleans doesn't have a large traditional mob presence like New York or Chicago was. It was a epicenter for many years, but Carlos decided that he did not want his family to have that burden personally, and so he stopped making members. So by the time he was imprisoned in the late 70s and early 80s, it was a very geriatric crew. So he's a complex guy.
Yeah, and he lived in a corner lot, on a corner lot in Metairie, and went to morning call a lot, as I understand. He was a man about town, but he did have a sinister past, and he went to prison, but he died with a clean record, didn't he?
You know, he passed away, and he was able to get most of his criminal engagements wiped. Some of them weren't. He definitely died at home with his family. I grew up blocks away from him, and definitely their family members say you still speak of him with a lot of reverence and affection and for the role he played in their lives. So,
all right, David in the Lakeside Subdivision, you're on. Please be brief, David. You're on with Matthew and with Lewis. Hi, David.
Hey, Lewis. Didn't you do some work for games? Not on screen, but some gaming entities.
All right. That's kind of unrelated gaming to what we're talking about, but gaming entities? Have you ever gone down that road, Lewis Eartham?
Gaming
entities?
That's what he
said. I don't know what he's talking about.
Honestly, nothing comes to mind unless I did a voiceover or something for him, but no, I have no idea what Dave's talking about.
Well, there is a segue to this as far as Carlos. Supposedly, he was heavily involved in illegal gambling in New Orleans. Was that the bread and butter for the organization in its heyday, Matthew Randazzo?
Absolutely. Now, that was what the New Orleans mob was known for nationally, illegal gambling. Carlos Marcello ran one of the largest wide-open gambling networks in the country and was invested both in Havana and Las Vegas, largely with a famous New York mobster by the name of Frank Costello. And that was definitely the bread and butter of the mafia family. That's why it was able to get progressively less violent as time went on.
All right. Lastly, a question from a listener. This is from Holly in the Garden District. Was he at all responsible for the killing of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the 35th American president? Was he involved in that?
I discussed that extensively in Mr. New Orleans. Frenchie was actually a friend of Lee Harvey Oswald's. So it's a complicated question that there's no simple answer to, but there are people who I interviewed who say yes and people who say it's preposterous. Definitely think it's worth reading for anyone who knows about the JFK assassination, and I know Lewis is an expert himself.
All right, I know, and we'll hopefully get Lewis back. We talk to him usually about once a year about this. He's become one of the foremost authorities on the JFK assassination. But Bill Huey asked a good question. What about the stories, I believe it's now more than a story, that Carlos was actually born in French Tunisia, is that correct?
Yeah, that is accurate. He was born while his mother was en route to emigrate to the United States and Tunisia, and that's one of the reasons why he wasn't a naturalized citizen and why he was deported in the 1960s and created his big feud with the Kennedys. He had a very complicated life story.
All right. Well, the book is Mr. New Orleans, for those who would like to get the book, and the audio book. How do they do it, Matthew Randazzo?
Absolutely. The best way to go, the audiobook is an exclusive release by Audible and Amazon. So you can get it digitally at audible.com or at Amazon. And you can actually get it for free if you sign up for an Audible trial. The paperback and Kindle are also available at Amazon and most local bookstores.
Thank you, sir. And Lewis, if you will, we'd love to have you back, even if we have to do it telephonically next month to talk about any developments. And there have been a few, I understand, in the search for the truth in what happened on November 22nd, 1963. Will you do it?
Absolutely, Jim. Love to.
Okay. Well, let's stay in touch and be safe.
Okay, pal.
And congrats on your continuing success.